Welcome to the Open House podcast site, available at openhousecommunity.com.au.
I often think with the stories we tell here on Open House with their perspectives on life, faith and culture, so many of them have the potential to change people's lives. This is one of them, especially if you're one of those marvellous, creative types who so enrich our world, or if you live with them, sometimes in awe of their creativity, sometimes driven to exasperation because they're just, well, so different. Living with a Creative Mind is the title of a new book written by a husband and wife team who are a really interesting mix in all of this. Julie Crabtree is a psychologist who's married to Jeff, a musician and arts educator. Julie and Jeff, welcome to Open House.
Thanks, Lee.
It's great to see you. Thanks so much for coming in. It's a fascinating subject. Tell us a bit about, I think, yourselves first. Where have you come from? Because you both actually embody the genius of this book and what you have to say about the creative mind. Julie.
Well, I've been a psychologist for about 30 years and I've been married to Jeff for a similar amount of time. And as a student who studies behaviour, being married to this unique person, creative person, it made me try and understand him more because we needed to learn to live together. And as we know from, you know, media, it's difficult living with creative people. Yeah. And so I had to learn over 30 years how to live with this unusual beast called a creative person.
Are you that difficult?
Oh, well, I want to say right now that I actually didn't think I was difficult to live with. And I just thought that she had to adapt and adjust. But you see, now, you know, time gives you a better perspective, you know.
Yeah.
So,
why are they challenging to live with?
Well, actually, looking back now, I am challenging to live with. I don't think I'm challenging to live with, but I realise for other people I am challenging to live with.
Yeah.
So my background is that, you know, I've been playing piano since before the age of 8. So I always wanted to be a professional musician. In fact, my parents would spend, you know, years trying to convince me to get a real job. And for a while I had one, actually had a real job and didn't like it. So I left all of that and became a professional musician. And then as you mentioned, I was the principal of a school of creative arts where we trained people in that area. And now the book, and I still compose music for film, and I'm a blues performer, and I'm still as challenging to live with as I was, you know, when we first got married.
You're both a wonderful mix. It's probably going to be helpful to put out a definition of what creativity actually is. How do you define the creative mind and how it works?
Well, we have adopted a definition by a guy called Ken Robinson, who's sort of the guru in this area. And his definition is that creativity is the process of having original ideas that have value. And such a great definition because it encapsulates everything. So first of all, we know creativity is a process.
Yes.
And then it's about, there's an originality in that. And then there are original ideas. And then those ideas have got to have value. So there are those three things. Original ideas can be anything. It can be just how you pack the car differently, or it can be a design for clothing, or it can be a new recipe, or it can be a symphony.
And it's broad, as you say.
It's broad.
And you don't have to be a creative genius.
You don't have to be.
No.
No. Actually, the three elements there, the idea itself, then there's a process that leads to that new thing. And then the other part of that is that the idea itself has to have value. So, you know, you could write a huge symphony piece of music, but everybody could think it's terrible. So that what you didn't say is, well, by definition, it's actually not really being creative. You've just written something bad.
So, Julie, the big idea you're trying to convey about creative people is what?
We understand from research, and this is research that's been going on for a number of years, and that is creative people think differently and they have a different temperament. They feel the world more deeply and they feel it differently. And they think more quickly, make unique associations. And this means that their internal world is very, very different to somebody who has got lower creativity. So the ability to make new and original ideas requires different internal processes. And it's this that we're trying to get across. A creative person has got to understand how they uniquely think and interact with the world in order for them to stay healthy and creative.
All they're trying to do is actually be creative, actually. And so their whole brain, the whole mind and everything is wired to be that. Our big idea, if you like, is the idea that if you can get them to be that, without damaging themselves and without damaging anybody else and without burning out. And if you can get them to be that productive and creative over a long period of time with fabulous relationships, that's actually the goal. That's the end goal.
So as you say, fulfillment lies in being true to who you really are.
Yeah, fulfillment. They're trying to be creative. So if we can get them to be fulfilled in that, you know, like people who are doctors and nurses, their fulfillment lies in helping people and getting them well. If you can put people in that kind of job where they're actually helping people getting well, then bam, they feel great about their life.
So from the benefit of both of your professional experiences, how are you best going to fulfill that gift or calling, Julie?
Firstly, you've got to understand that if you think rapidly and fluidly, you're taking in new information all the time. You've got to learn how to manage those periods of up where you're thinking so fast. But you've also got to know how to go to that place of still. Because if you stay up in terms of your thinking all the time, you're going to push yourself beyond a place that is helpful and healthy for you. So there is an area where you're sparking and thinking the ideas are coming, you're just having a wonderful time. But if you stay there and don't know how to take yourself back to a place where it's still, then you're going to have problems. In the same way, if you are wired to feel things deeply and don't know how to manage that, then you're going to either feel so deeply that you're just going to crawl into a corner, which is kind of like almost like the depression. Or you're going to develop this hard callus, which means that you're not going to be as creative as you normally should be.
Jeff, you'll know about all that.
Oh, absolutely. I used to think that was just normal.
Yeah.
And in one sense, it is normal for me. But what I've discovered is that, I mean, it's part of the process, actually, of, you know, living with a psychologist, because you're under observation the whole time. You feel like you live under the glass. You know, microscope is on 24/7.
Yes.
What we've found is that those ups and downs of the creative life, you know, they're reflected in a whole lot of different parts or aspects of what it means to be creative. And Julie's just mentioned a couple of them there. But we found that there are nine aspects, which we've written about in the book. There are nine separate aspects of those things. We call them the nine dimensions of the creative mind. And I go up and down in them all the time. But what I've actually found was that each of those ups and downs, the highs and lows, are actually about what it means to be creative for me. So there are certain low ebb tide, if that's the right word, actually helps me be creative, even though it feels bad.
How long might they last?
You know, it's different, and it's different for different parts of different processes for me. And sometimes I find that when I'm right down, if I focus on being down and depressed and unhappy, then I can stay down there for, you know, months actually. Really, if I focus on it, I'm really good at it. I've developed this. I can stay buried in a hole for months at a time. But actually, what I found is what brings me out is the process of actually engaging my creative drive in there. Because when you're down, you actually see things differently. You see things that actually provoke the creative process.
Wow.
So I'm saying that now as a writer,
composer, yes.
You know, sort of, you know, I tell stories. I suppose you'd describe me as a narrative storyteller. All of those moments. And when you're up, of course, as a performer, when you're up, you feel great. You feel amazing. I mean, there's nothing quite like the feeling of performing to large crowds. And you don't want to lose that high. Does that make sense? But what I've actually found is if you actually learn your own tidal flow, the way your own tides go, and you swim with you navigate with the tides, and then certain kinds of up moments, I know I've got to be creating in this kind of performance mode, and in certain kinds of down times, I know I've got to be looking for what I'm going to see differently there that I can write and produce from.
Julie, you talk about keeping the well full to be able to fulfill this creative life. Full of what?
Creative people are by nature, and this is research-based, this isn't just good ideas. Creative people are by nature risk-takers. They are going to go out and experience things because it's part of how they're wired. As I described, my family are all creative, and so they will go out and do performance art, which means they will go and do slightly outrageous things just to see how people will react around them.
Lee, every social moment for us is a potential act of comedic terrorism, if you like. So people in restaurants and cafes and things, particularly if I haven't been doing any gigs, there are really some amazing, I think they're incredibly funny. But people are really quite disconcerted by it.
We could have a moment before this interview is out.
We could.
Who would know?
I don't know. I regard this as a performance, so we're all good. Everything's I'm being fulfilled.
Oh, but what about tomorrow?
Oh, well, Lynn, there's always tomorrow. I'll phone you with what happened.
So understanding that they're going to take risks. The question is, what are they going to take risks in? Because they're taking risks because they've got to fill the well.
Yes.
They're taking in, like a visual artist will take in textures, tones, light all the time. A musician takes in sounds all the time. An actor will take in characters and ideas all the time. Yep. So, and they will put themselves in situations where they will be able to take in new information. That is keeping their well full. Part of that is taking the risks, going out of the ordinary, the routine, the normal, the dull, the boring. Recognizing creative people, for them, death is boredom and the same. So they're going to go outside. They're going to do and experience different things.
Which to others may seem weird, erratic, bizarre.
Yes.
And
yes.
Actually, but it's okay.
So for us, for me, boredom is death. It's, you know, death and boredom are the same thing. But for most people, they're happy for life to be predictable. Everybody talks about, I like change. But actually, in actual fact, most people are uncomfortable with it.
Yeah, that's true. I'm sure that's true.
But what I will tend to do is push certain boundaries just because. And because my area of, I guess my creative area is to do with writing and composition and music and performance, you know, I'll push the social boundaries and I'll push the experiential boundaries.
Let's see where that ends.
Let's see where that goes. What happens?
You make the point that one of the challenges of being a creative person or being with one is that to other non-creative types, it's measured not against corporate benchmarks. They may not even seem productive. So how would you best both advise a creative person and those around them on that? Okay, so if you're not, in inverted commas, productive.
It's if you understand the way the creative mind is wired, then you will understand the power of play. Because creative people have to play. It is part of getting the juices running. So if you're a creative person and you are trying to create within your workplace, but you have a boss who likes everything predictable, schedules, routines, bottom line, etc., you're not going to get your best out of your creative person. If you let them play, be naughty, do all of those things, then their creative juice is going to flow and you're going to get some great creative ideas out of them. Depends what you want.
That's as the psychologist. What about as a wife?
As a wife?
When you're letting him play. Well, you know, how hard is that?
Well, again, it
I'm interested in this
answer. Yes. Or challenging it is.
Yeah. It's actually understanding and working through what the play is around. And for me as a wife, understanding that he does need to do that and for us to talk about what the boundaries and parameters are. So I know, for example, that part of his playing is travelling. So I've had to accept as a wife that he will need to do some travelling. And that's part of us negotiating through that. That's an example of how we've done it.
Yeah. Jeff, there's a great quote in the book that says lots of creative souls are buried under the pragmatics of working to eat.
Yeah, and that's actually what most creative people find themselves doing.
That's their burden.
That's their burden. Mm-hmm. They often find themselves in jobs actually that we had a comment from a guy who actually read something in our book and actually posted on our Facebook page and said, I'm reading this part of the book and I'm crying because I know this is me that you're talking about. And he works in graphic design, but what he does is he's doing meat market graphic design. This is in another part of the world completely. Doing meat market graphic design, he's doing things, I guess, for supermarkets and whatever else, and fruit and vegetables. And
in any creative endeavor.
In any creative endeavor, there's that. And then there are people who are desperate to actually be using their creative talents in the, you know, in an artistic sense, and but are locked in jobs, like where they're in accountancy or they're in, you know, they're in administration. And they're quietly dying, actually. They actually, I talked with one recently, and she was just saying, I shut myself down.
Yeah. And yet, I can also, at the other end of the spectrum, kind of feel minds around Australia being liberated by the fact that it's okay to feel as though I want to play, as you say, Julie.
Mm-hmm. Well, actually, we believe that the book is actually pretty interesting. It's been timely for us because a whole lot of things in our lives have changed, and this is actually the perfect time for this book to be out. But we also think it's timely in terms of where Australia is at, because the entire economy is shifting and changing. And if you, honestly, if you're not in a minerals-based industry or you're not in the health industry,
yep.
you're looking around going, I wonder what my job's going to be like or if it's going to even exist. I mean, manufacturing jobs are sort of evaporating.
Yes.
And then there's, so what's left, it's retail. And then what else? The new economies are going to be driven by knowledge and new ideas. And it's the creative people, whether or not, see, musicians and artists are creative thinkers in no matter what circumstance they're in.
And enhance our lives.
Yeah, but even if you take them out of music but put them in something where they've got to come up with new ideas, the skills that they've learnt to be performers and to be composers actually transfer. Yeah. And we believe that, I mean, creativity is not just about the music and about the painting. We talk about that a lot. But in fact, we believe that the companies and organisations that are going to prosper in this new economy are organisations that harness innovation and harness people who create innovation. And those people are the creative thinkers. And you cannot put them into management structures that worked well for the Industrial Revolution,
yeah.
that worked well for the 1950s management models. So you've got a whole bunch of people, listeners can forgive me, marching out of with their MBAs, marching out of all of these great business colleges with a process-driven management model. Actually doesn't work for innovation. You can't create, you can't get innovation in that.
You're expanding my mind. On Open House, we're with Jeff and Julie Crabtree, authors of Living with a Creative Mind. In just a moment, how the creative mind is a spiritual experience. It's an area they actually get and also need. Here's a question for both of you. Is being a creative person a matter of nurture or nature?
Well, that's an interesting question. A recent study was done, this is November 2011, it was published, of 100,000 people in a European city, nation. They found a close, familiar association with the creative and those that were mentally unwell. So that the indications are that it's definitely an element of inherited issues and problems. But so what you do with it, that's nature, yeah. but it was what you do with it.
But also gifts go with that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That might be a rather controversial kind of thing to come up with, to confront a creative person with that.
Yes. Yes. And again, that's part of what we were talking about before in terms of the unique way they think and the unique way that they feel. Those things have been associated with particular types of mental illness. And this is why, for us, it's really important that a creative person learns how to manage those things because it's going to keep them mentally healthy.
Yeah. So, again, and we touched on it before, what's your advice to those people who are probably more susceptible to the highs and lows of life as they move through those rhythms?
I mean, they've been taught in many ways to be normal. And that, I think, has not been good advice.
And they're not.
They're not normal.
No.
What we would say is start understanding your rhythms. Start understanding your highs. Start understanding your lows. And don't understand the things that are going to drive against that. So we would identify fear and anxiety, rejection.
Insecurity.
Insecurity and what we call spin. They're the things that would drive you out of your normal and natural rhythm.
Why spin?
Well, spin's what you get out of Canberra, you know.
I've locked onto that.
Yeah, yeah. Spin really is deception.
Yes, it's not a reality.
Mm. Yes.
Yeah, well, it's reality version two. It's reality, you know, improved.
Yeah.
New and improved reality. the reality that we would like you to buy. I have to say, when we sort of hit upon this, in the end, I finished up writing that part of the book because I think I found myself more profoundly attached to the notion of spin as a problem for creative people, because creative people are trying to find the truth. We're looking for what's real. When I'm writing a piece of music, even if it's for an ad, Lee,
yes.
I have to have something in it that's true and real for me. Otherwise, I can't do it.
And pure.
The purity of it is, even if it's pure, not to necessarily to a product, but pure to an idea or a feeling or something, whether it's an emotion, whether it's whatever it is, there's got to be something in it for me that's true. And so I find myself affected by untruth.
A creative person to perform they have to have an incredible ego to get up on stage and perform. Yes. And to create, I mean, we do tend to gather around the creative people. They're often charismatic, charming, amazing people. You gather around people that are going to tell you how amazing and wonderful you are. You're going to push up your ego till it's a place that's not helpful for you. Because we also need people that are going to help us know the truth, not only about our work, but about us. So that's the problem with spin.
So you say it's important to understand the highs and lows. Mm. How am I going to manage those and how am I going to smooth them out, or can't you smooth them out?
I don't think you can smooth them out. We use the idea of tides, this idea that there are natural tides at the beach, and so for the creative person there are natural tides. Some of those tides are going to be up when you're sparking, you're creative, it's all happening, it's a buzz and it's amazing, and just knowing there's going to be a natural ebb, that you're going to need to come down from that. You're going to need to be a little flatter.
Yeah, but you don't want to. See, that's the thing. Yeah, you go, oh, I don't know, this feels bad. Yeah. But it's actually not bad. It's good for you.
So you're not going to give me a strategy to avoid it?
No, I'm not going to give you a strategy to avoid it because it's how you're wired. But knowing that you're going to come back into an ebb again, if you know your tides, you're going to go, there's going to be an ebb and flow. What happens with a creative person is that they're up and they start to just, their body just starts to get tired and they're going to start to fall back again. They worry that they're going to lose their creativity, so they try and artificially create it.
And this is especially for the person living with them.
Yes.
So it's one thing to be in that head, but the poor soul who's living with these highs and lows.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
How to manage that.
Yes. And I think that's difficult because you've got somebody that's going through this cycle of moods within a very short period of time. And if you find yourself attached to that and going with that, then you're going to...
It's exhausting.
It's exhausting. Understanding, let them go through their highs and lows. Let them go through it. Yeah. I used to say with Jeff, there were two speeds full on dead stop. And if I tried to live with his speeds, I'm not wired for that.
No.
So I've got to actually learn how to live with my speeds.
Both of our daughters are creative, you see. This has been my realization when I'm dealing with them. I'm going, oh my goodness, you know what? that's infuriating. And then I realize, and they're just like, man.
What a research project.
Exactly, exactly. And so you go, all right. So that's, and so when, you know, when they're feeling emotion, when I'll say this about our daughter, when they're feeling emotion, they're really feeling emotion, yes. And it's full on.
Jeff, you make an important point in your book a number of times that being creative is not just a matter of being born like it, as we say, nurture or nature, that you cannot be a kind of instant genius. Hmm. It usually, typically, takes slog.
I've been playing music for over 40 years and I've worked with a great number of professional musicians, and I don't know anybody who hasn't worked. I know one person who was instantly an amazing drummer, apparently. Wow. But actually, she had grown up, she was Latino, she'd grown up in America in a family of, and she was a percussionist. And she'd grown up, so she actually had been working on her skills without knowing it, sat behind a drum kit and then amazed everybody. And,
it's been in her world, in her head.
But in actual fact, she had been working on it. She'd been working on it for years and years and years without knowing on. Everybody that I know works like crazy to get it happening. And they so work like crazy that it's the unwritten rule. And that's why everybody in the arts, in fact, actually kind of take it personally when people go, oh, we don't like it. They do take, even though it's not personal, they take it personally because so much of their life has gone into it.
Yes.
You know, there's this story, and it's probably apocryphal, of Richard Clydeman, the piano player, who, you know, he's not my bag, but he's a really, really good player. And he did a concert at Carnegie Hall in New York, and a business guy comes backstage because he wanted to hang out with Richard Clayton, and brings all his friends in, and he's in the dressing room, and he says to Richard Clayton, he says, man, I'd give my life to play like you. And Richard Clayton apparently said, well, I did. That was his answer.
Yes.
And I don't know whether that's true, but I know that all the musicians that I know tell that story, and they retell it because it actually validates what it is that we do. We spend the hours.
That's the gift. And when you talk about a gift, it's not something that I've just got from no hard work. Mm. My gift to the world is all that hard work in a way. Yeah.
So it is talent. I mean, there is a gift. There is a talent. There is some talent you get, but the difference between a person who looks at a great artist or a great performer and say, what a talent, and then the people in the business go, yeah, they've got talent, but they've worked hard. That's the difference. Everybody knows that it's not just talent. Yeah. Talents, the gift that, you know, I guess God gives you. You know, what you get born with.
You mentioned before, Julie, briefly about rejection. Mm. What's your advice on how to deal with rejection, especially amidst those highs and lows? Yes. Because that comes with the creativeness.
We talk in the book about the fact that creative people can be described as skinless. There's a skinlessness, which means that they do life with one layer missing. And so that ability to feel deeply and feel deeply what others are feeling. And so that means that any time themselves or their work gets rejected, they will feel it deeply. But it is part and parcel of being a creative person. So learning how to deal with rejection is an issue for creative people. And we would say that your best buffer for that is firstly understanding you're skinless and not keep on putting yourself all the time out there without some recovery time. But also you have to have a loving, affirming community. You have to have that to survive. Because if you're trying to be out there and you're trying to just put yourself out there all the time, get rejected over and over again, without having a loving people around you that say you're great, you're wonderful, then I think that's when you start becoming quite calloused and hurt. Mm. And it does damage to your soul, I think.
People don't get exactly how important affirmation is for the creative mind.
Yeah.
You know, simply because every time you do something, there's a critic in it. There's a critic in every room. And I mean, you must have the same thing. You'd walk into a party and be going, yeah, I heard your radio show. And by the way, can you fix this, this, and the other thing? And you're sitting there going, man, I've just poured my heart out. Not everybody likes everything that we do. And that's the sad fact. But actually, that's the joyful fact, because there are people who, you know. So that's why affirmation.
One of the really interesting observations you make is that the creative person will be more plugged into a spiritual world, I mentioned before, beyond themselves. Mm. In fact, you say the creative experience is in fact a spiritual exercise. It's an arena they understand, they get it, and they need it.
Mm.
What do you mean by that?
Again, research says that creative people are more in touch with a mystical experience. The problem they have is that they are by nature spiritual because in part, I think that where they go to for their creativity is very closely linked to that sense of the spiritual. The problem is because they're wired the way they are, they find regular, dogmatic structure very difficult. So you find that creative people are often on the fringes of a church community. And that's something that both Jeff and I feel very sad about, because your creative people is designed to be in a loving, affirming community like a church.
Absolutely.
But they need to be understood. They're going to be not normal.
Yep.
And so there has to be some understanding, some give and take with that. If they don't find that affirmation within a church community, then they'll find that affirmation in other places. And your creative people will get plugged into spirituality. It's where they go for it.
Jeff, what would you say?
Yeah, I'm totally there with that. Of course, I mean, because, you know, I'm married to her and all that stuff. We wrote the book together.
Tell you later.
My experience, contribution to the notion of spirituality comes from the other side, which is the experience of creativity, and it's the answer to the question: where do the ideas come from? Where does the music come from? You know, where do the stories come from? You know, where do the sounds come from? You know, and I actually asked John Lord this question, the keyboard player from Deep Purple. I've spoken to John Lord. I asked him a question. I said, where does the music come from? And it was like it completely – he's a very articulate man, by the way. Completely undid him. You know, he couldn't answer the question. And I think that's the same for me. I think about that question. The ideas are coming from somewhere else. I've dreamt music. And where does that come from? And I'll be driving along in the car with no sound on, and then all of a sudden this stuff comes in. Where does that come from? I've started singing music in the shower that I've written. You know, like I got a little 8-bar phrase. And where does that come from? It's coming from somewhere else.
Could you say it comes from God? I mean, God doesn't have to create us as creative beings.
No, I would say it comes from God. And I'm not alone in saying that amongst the creative community. The girl who was her name? The lady who wrote Eat, Pray, Love. What was her name? She thinks it comes from God. Mm. Elizabeth Gilbert. That's her declaration. She's not alone. Leonard Cohen says, you know, it's like I'm married to a mystery. Tom Waits actually prays to his ideas as they're coming at him, because Tom Waits apparently gets ideas for songs when he's on the freeway in Los Angeles, and he says, I'm not in my studio now. Can you wait until I get back home?
Please do.
And so please wait. And so there is, for the creative mind, it's easy to accept a supernatural, a spiritual thing.
Paul McCartney says, I think there was a little bit of emptiness in our souls, a lack of spiritual fulfillment. Brahms, the great composer, classical composer, the ideas flow in upon me directly from God. It's an interesting quote from Marina Pryor. I have a spiritual life, therefore performing doesn't actually define me. That's why I can be brave. Everything doesn't hang on it.
Yeah, which is the other thing. Then it's this notion that, you know, if you are part of a bigger framework, if your world is bigger than just your creativity, if you are part of connected to a larger sense of reality.
Your identity.
Yeah. Then you can actually, the rejection isn't so bad. You know, the insecurity can be dealt with that way. You can actually handle, it's almost like you insulate yourself from those things, not by shutting yourself off from it, not by closing yourself down, not by hardening your heart, but by understanding that you've been made for a bigger purpose, made for something. And it's okay if what you put out there people don't like, because there'll be people who will. It's like you're sowing your seed, you know, and some of it doesn't grow so well and some of it shoots up, and that's all right.
Totally. Julie, you explore the role of forgiveness in the spiritual and the creative. Why forgiveness? That would seem to come out of left field.
Not if you understand skinlessness. Not if you understand how deeply creative people feel.
And skinlessness, again, is what?
It's doing life with one layer missing. So it's feeling things, sensing things, without the normal filtering processes that people without the creativity have. And so you're going to be taking in a lot more. You're going to be feeling a lot more. So how do you deal with this feeling? Where does it go? What do you do with it? How do you process it? One of the most powerful things you can do is the process of forgiveness, the process of letting go, the process of reconciling. Those things, I think, are amazing, amazing ways for the creative person to be able to process their deep emotion.
Is it a self-forgiveness in addition to others?
I think so. I think so.
How's that work?
I think that it's this sense of grace that you have for yourself and grace that you have for others. I think if you are going through life feeling things deeply, feeling things intensely for yourself, and you don't have that grace, then I think you can get really locked in to quite destructive ways of thinking. But if you understand that you've got grace for yourself, you understand you've got grace for others, then I think you can do life a little easier.
I think if you've been forgiven, you can forgive others. And I think if you've been forgiven, you can forgive yourself.
It's the grace of God.
It is the grace of God. I think there's a dysfunction, though, if you've been forgiven and don't forgive others.
Yes.
And I think there's a dysfunction if you've
Which been, is what Jesus said.
Yeah. And I think there's a dysfunction if you've been forgiven and you can't forgive yourself too, you know. So there's like a dynamic interplay there that those things have to work together. And I mean, it'd be easy to actually put the hammer down and go, whack, you know, and people would be listening to this and go, wow, oh, whack, I've just been whacked, you know. Mm. But it's a journey. That stuff's a journey. It's our life is a narrative. Our life is a story, an unfolding story. And, you know, we go through seasons of not being able to forgive ourselves for things and then having to come to terms with that.
I feel so many times so blessed and so privileged to be in this job with the people I talk to, and I knew this would be one of those conversations. I'm so grateful for our time together and our conversation together. It's been great. Jeff and Julie Crabtree, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks.
Thank
on
you.
Open House.
Thanks, Lee. Good evening.
Thank you.
We hope you enjoyed this Open House podcast. Thanks to Christian Super and Real World Technology Solutions. To hear more from Open House, visit openhousecommunity.com.au.